I'm from an abusive foster home. I'm that kid that everybody said should have been in prison or whatever or whatnot, but I'm not there, and I didn't do that, and I just took a different road and got over my own problems myself.
There's a short little intro. I'll say welcome to Elevate Today Podcast. We are on. This is Casey. Casey, what is your last name?
Adams.
Casey Adams. So I've known you for a little while now. And I'm really thankful to have been able to read that article in the magazine about your story. And I got the story there. But yeah, I'm just really thankful to be able to interview you, ask you questions. You're the kind of people that when I meet you in person and hear your story, I'm like, I have to have a podcast for people like you.
Oh, really?
Yes. I have to document these stories because the pain that you've been through and can turn into a good and beautiful thing and still have hope for your life, those stories are needed so much. Right now, people in the world are doing crazy things because of their pain, because they don't hear other ways to cope with the deep pain that you know, that you transformed into something good and beautiful. And so since I'm being pretty general with my words and you know exactly what I'm talking about, could you, if you want to give more info, introduce yourself, but like talk about that transformative experience.
Well, I mean, I'm a believer in God first. Mm-hmm. First. And that in itself takes, that's a challenge. And losing a child will make you doubt everything you've ever learned or everything you've ever been about or everything you've ever seen. Now, I'm I've experienced my brother, Marlo, lose his son. And we were all there and watched him suffer through cancer and all that. And little Miles was like, we called him a bad dude because he used to get shots in his stomach all the time. And he didn't ever complain or nothing like that. And we used to just think he was so tough. And then one day Marlo was telling him, damn, you a bad dude. And he looked at his dad and goes, well, you ain't lying. So we used to have a football camp and we used to give these bad dude t-shirts out. Yeah. And they used to say bad dude on the back. And he used to say, you ain't lying.
Dang.
Yeah. So Miles is always inspired me on how tough you gotta be. You know, I'm a coach. So, you know, I look at kids and I'm like, hey, look, you gotta be tough. You know, you gotta go through some tough things. Then you gotta, but I never knew tough until I'd seen Miles. That was a different kind of tough. He's really, really tough. So he battled the worst thing of his life and he battled it with a smile on his face. Mm-hmm. You know, he was always inspiring. And then here we are a couple of years later, you know, I lose my son. Hmm. And I used to tell him all the time when he was running football scored, he'd look up at me and I'd go, I see you, boy. I see you, boy. You know? And so we end up having a camp, football camp for those two, the Miles Brinson, J.R. Adams football camp. And we had a couple of hundred kids there all the time. Hmm. And on those two shirts, we used to have the bad dude shirt and I see you, boy shirt. Because the two kids inspired, you know, a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So we carry on that tradition now and everything we do. But you're right, to get to a point to where it's hard to explain your pain, and then it's hard to explain how you get over it. I didn't get over it till this weekend.
Yeah.
And it which is 17 years.
Wow.
That's 17 years of pure me. Smokey Robinson has this song, okay, and when you listen to it, it'll blow your mind. And the words go, if you take a good look at my face, you'll see that my smile is out of place. Hmm. Yeah, and it's the tracks of my fears. So that song I've always related to, because when I heard that song, it was when I was 22 years ago, I had an addiction problem. And I seen Smokey Robinson speaking at Cathedral of Faith and I got clean that day. And I've never looked back sense. It was weird. This guy out and invited me to go to a NA meeting, a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and the speaker was Smokey Robinson, who had just climbed from under a bridge and had been smoking crack under a bridge for 2 years. And nobody knew where he was.
Jeez.
Yeah. And the funny part about it, he's sitting here smoking crack with a guy for 2 years. And one day after 2 years, the guy looks at him and goes, wait a minute. Like, you're Smokey Robinson, the singer. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, all this time we've been getting high, you didn't tell me you were Smokey Robinson? He goes, I told you my name was Smokey. He goes, yeah, but you didn't say Smokey Robinson. Yeah, and it was just funny because he's sitting up there, you know, talking about losing millions of dollars and how he got addicted to drugs and basically was almost lost his life. And his savior, his angel, was that guy. Because when that guy realized it was Smokey Robinson, he threw down the crack pipe and looked at him and says, I can't do this. You're a blessing from God.
Dang.
We got to go get help. And he introduced that guy. He was his personal agent then. Just some random guy. So God works in ways, and he comes and gets you in ways, but you got to listen to him when he's doing it. Because I do believe in God, and I am definitely guilty of not listening or trusting it and trusting the process. Because this is 17 years before I ever faced my demons. Ever. And this weekend I was in Mexico, back to the spot where my son got killed. And my goodness, that had to have been the hardest, craziest, overwhelming. I never cried so hard in my, hard. And then I never smiled so big either. Hmm. So it went from one extreme to another. Because once you understand that there's a heaven, like a truly heaven, like there's a place that's way bigger and better than here. Way, way bigger and better. Hmm. Now, if you tell me, take my son and we're going to sacrifice him for everybody else, I'm like, I would never do that. You know what I mean? But understanding that he's in a place like that is just unreal. Just unreal, man.
How did you know that, like, a way to find your healing would be to go back to...
I didn't. I know I didn't want to go. Oh, I had no idea none of that was... I didn't go back with that in mind. I have been offered... I got a buddy, Joe, who's tried to take me to Mexico numerous times. And I've always lied to him. I've told him I didn't have money. I told him I couldn't go. I told him it was a bad time. Now, Joe also knows me really pretty well. He knows, you know, I've had dreams about that place that are just, they're horrific. I mean, they make me not want to sleep. You know, I wake up in puddles of sweat, and there it is, 17 years later, I'm still having those same dreams. Mm-hmm. And so I've never really had a really good night's sleep. So to say I knew that was going to happen, no, I didn't know that was going to happen. To say I was expecting things like that was going to happen, no, I didn't expect that. But I will tell you, my son's favorite number was number 3, and I value number 3 every time I trip on it. But that second I landed in Mexico and I got on my seat to go to Mexico, I was in seat number 3. So... You know, God and my son had something to do with that. As soon as I got out the airport, I'm getting my luggage out of aisle 3. You know, it was a big old 3. I took pictures of it. I go, this is crazy. This is too much of a coincidence. You know, I went to the last place we spent together, which was snorkeling. 3 turtles swam by.
Wow.
Yeah. My father-in-law, you know, I love him to death. He's passed away, but he loved turtles. And he also loved my son. Mm. So... the fact that 3 turtles went by and the number was 3 was just mind-blowing to me. So how do you know? You don't know. You know, how do you plan? You don't plan for this. You know, how do you cope? Well, you just trust the process. And I say to myself now, God, I wish I'd have went there years ago. You know, why didn't I go years ago? I was scared to go to Mexico. I was petrified to go back to Mexico. It was such a horrific thing that happened. And, you know, like, it's just like my son, you know, he passed away, and I had to sleep with his body for 2 days. Can you imagine sleeping with your dead son's body to keep people from stealing his organs? Because down there, they take your organs out, and then they sell them to the highest bidder. I mean, all your organs, your eyes, your heart, your liver, kidneys, all that kind of stuff.
It was just you and him?
It wasn't just me and him. It was me, my wife, a couple of my nephews, a good friend of mine, Francisco, and his wife. Thank God I had Francisco because he spoke Spanish. Mm. And the night it happened, we sent everybody home the next day. So it was just me and Francisco down there. And he was just, you know, giving me the rules. He's from Mexico, so he was telling me the rules of the land. And believe me, when you're in a third world country, the rules do not apply in any way, shape, or form to what your American thinking is, right. I should say, or American laws or things you think that can protect you and all that kind of stuff. It's just a different world.
Did you know that before everything went down?
Well, everybody tells you these stories. Right. You know, you hear all these stories about, you know, Mexico. We were at a resort that was surrounded by guns. you know. So when I seen that, I was like, why they got all these guns? They go, oh, you'll see. You know. But once you got into the resort, it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, it is beautiful. I mean, nice swimming pools, ocean, you know, you can go scuba diving, horseback riding, all that good stuff. It's beautiful. But you're right, outside of that, like in deep parts of Mexico, the laws change, things change. It's just like United States, you know, you got your Beverly Hills and then you got, you know, West Oakland.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Very different.
It's a whole different. Yeah, this one, they don't have liquor store every corner. And this one, they got a liquor store every corner. You know what I mean? There's different parts of the world. But you learn to adapt and then do what you got to do.
Can you share about what you were telling me when you were at the police officer?
Oh, when I had the police station the next day?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was... So you're in a police station. First of all, you're walking in a building and it looks like you're at Mayberry RFD. It's like dirt road. It looks like an old Western town. You know what I mean? But it's got police cars and stuff, but it's really not like going downtown San Jose and looking at a police station. It's just, you know, it's like the OK Corral. It's like you're out in the country, you're out in the middle of nowhere, right? I go down to get, I'm trying to get my son's body back to United States, but you have to get a police report and death certificates and all this kind of stuff that you got to get in order for that body to get back across. And while I'm at the police station, the kid that killed my son is there with his father. Jeez. Now, this kid tells his father the next day that he's done something bad. And he doesn't know what it is, but he says, I know it was something bad because I got up and I hit a car, I hit a deer, I hit a person. I don't know what I did, but I got out and I ran. So that night my son got hit. The car was there, but the person wasn't there. But you can see the windshield was all shattered, like the car hit somebody, you know. That night, you know, he dies in my arms. And, you know, I never forget that part. But when I get to the police station, it's a kid. It's a, you know, it's a 17-year-old kid that went to like a quinceañera prom thing, him and his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And the police tell the father of that kid who I am. I'm there, and he goes, "That is the father of the kid that your son killed," and the father trips out. So the father asked the police officer to come ask me if he can talk to me. Okay, so I'm in the police station waiting for some paperwork, and the police comes over and says, "Hey, the father of the kid that hit your son is here, and he wants to talk to you." And I said, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, he made," because we didn't know who did it or what did it or whatever. But so he tells me all this at one time. I go, "Some kid hit my son?" He goes, "Yeah, it's his son that's standing right there." And I'm like, I'm so glad I had God in my heart at that time. Because if that had happened in my 20s, it would have been a different reaction. And I know that. And it would have been a different reaction. But at that time, I'm, it's just, you know, this nightmare kept getting worse. I mean, it was, you know, you're one night, your kid's dying in your arm, and the next afternoon, you're faced with the person who actually did it. Jeez. And so you're saying to yourself, what do you do here? You know, I didn't know what to do. And so the father explains to me, his son is a straight A student. You know, they basically went to a prom, and he's never drank or anything before, but that night, you know, him and his buddies and peer pressure, whatever, he started drinking. He goes down, his girlfriend was trying to take his keys and tell him not to drive. And, you know, he's been drinking too much or whatever. And he was fighting her off and telling her to go. And she says, well, I'm not getting in the car. My dad told me never to get in the car with somebody that's drinking. And you shouldn't drive, whatever. And he did it anyway. Well, he hit and killed my son that night. And he was on the side of the road. I mean, he's on the sidewalk. This kid ran off the road and hit him. And the girl walked home in her prom dress. She was telling me, I took my shoes off and I walked all the way home in my prom dress. And she was there at the police station that day too. And she was telling them in Spanish. Francisco was translating for me, because she was like, I told you not to drive. I told you not to. You know, mm-hmm. She's telling them. And I always wondered if they're still together or whatever, but I just thought that was kind of a trippy thing. You know, like right now I go and talk in front of high schools and stuff when they're talking about drugs and alcohol and the consequences of what can happen. You know, and a lot of people know me as coach and seeing this stuff, they don't know too much of the story. But when I sit up in front of 300 kids and tell this story and tell them, what are the chances of something like this happening to somebody? You know, what are the chances you think of you driving home and drunk and you get home safely without doing it? He goes, a lot of times you get home. You know, a lot of times you get home, nothing happens. You know, you thank God you got there. You didn't crash. You didn't get a DUI. You know, nothing bad happens. But look at what could happen. I would have never thought that this would happen to me or my son. My son had just got his full ride football scholarship to the University of Boise the day before.
So you guys were there celebrating?
We were celebrating him going off to college on a full ride football scholarship. And that he's been working for brutally hard. Had just had a great year at Valley Christian. They'd won 3 straight CCS championships in football. Number one team in the nation at the time. He was just on the road. Did everything right. You know, they never got in trouble. Great kid. I mean, I hear crazy stories about him, you know, that blows my mind. I was at my shop. It must have been 3-4, I don't know, about Christmas time. And a guy calls me and says, I need to set up an appointment. I'm coming to get my hair cut. And I'm like, okay. All right. So he comes in, big, tall, white guy. You know, he gets his hair cut. He's got these hearing aids. And he goes, I can't talk to you. I got to take these hearing aids. And he goes, but I need to talk to you after, if it's okay with you. And so I say, okay. So I cut his hair. And after we go outside, and he goes, I got to tell you this story. He goes, I'm at my niece's wedding in Seattle, Washington, and everybody has a necklace on with a picture on it, okay? And so she gave it to all her bridesmaids. All of them had this same necklace on with a picture on it. And, you know, so the dads are all giving a toast, the best man gives a toast and all that stuff, and then they give the mic to the bride, and she stands up and says, I was the girl at school that was cutting myself. I was the girl that wasn't pretty. I was the girl that got picked on and the girls made fun of and the boys didn't like me or called me names. Okay, I was that girl. And one day this kid walks in class and people were teasing me and he made everybody stop. And he made sure everybody knew I was his friend. And he had lunch with me. Every day I came to school, He waited for me. He says, this is the most popular boy in the whole school. And it was J.R. Adams. And that necklace you got.
He kept me from wanting to kill myself. Dang. I just thought I was worthless. I wasn't important. And he stopped. He didn't even know me. He just stopped. He didn't like the fact that people were laughing at me. He told me how beautiful I was. He told me how awesome we was. He goes, me and him became amazing friends. She goes, he died. He got hit by a drunk driver when I was in high school. And I almost lost it again because I lost my best friend. I lost my buddy. I lost the guy that stood up for me. Now, he didn't want nothing from me. He didn't want to kiss me. He didn't want to have sex with me. He didn't want nothing. He just wanted to be my friend. And he stood up for me just because it was the right thing to do. And he made me feel I was important because I was feeling really, really bad. Wow. So here we are at this wedding. And so this is her uncle hears this story in Seattle. So he talks to her after, and he's like, wow, where is this guy's family? She goes, in Gilroy, whatever. That guy flew all the way to Gilroy to give me one of those necklaces.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I gave it to my daughter, you know, but I just thought, you know, here's an amazing story of a kid that's doing things for people. And I'm always telling people, do something for somebody. Don't expect nothing in return.
And you never knew about this girl?
Well, he's probably, he's got a bunch of friends at school. You know, dad is this girl at school. You know, she was whatever, cutting herself or whatever. And I told her, you know, I go, all right, you're doing the right thing. You know, just stand up for her. But, you know, it's amazing when, you know, you'll be a parent one day, but it's always good to hear when somebody else tells you your kid did something good for somebody, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the best compliment as a parent for me. I just thought that was crazy that guy flew all the way down. Here, and they're supposed to send me the film of it. You know, they filmed the whole wedding or something. I haven't gotten it yet, but he's got a recording of that, and I just something I want to see one day. But that was a good thing. That's a good story.
How did you raise him to be like that? Did he always have that in him?
Well, I'm from a foster system that was pretty abusive. You know, I have a cigarettes burns on my left foot where I was in a foster home where this guy used to put a cigarette out on my foot every night, telling me how unimportant I am and how much he didn't like me. And the only reason I'm there is because of his wife. But you're worthless. Your mother doesn't want you. Your father doesn't want you. You don't want that. So, in those foster systems, it's pretty brutal. And it's funny how I got to Gilroy at the children's home, the IWF children's home. I don't know if you know that. It's in Gilroy. Mm-hmm. I was raised in there. It's an orphanage there. And pretty much a bunch of us, you know, we're always told we're not worthy or people don't want you and you're here and we can't stand you and whatever. And some of those foster kids end up, you know, committing suicide or turning into a real bad drug addict or doing a lot of time in prison now. And everybody just kind of assumes that's what you're supposed to do or whatever. That's what society thinks. And I'm lucky. I'm really, really lucky. So I played sports. So I almost developed a family in sports. You know, my family was the football team. I mean, I remember not going home after practice because I didn't want to go home. I would just keep practicing. And everybody goes, God damn, you're pretty good. I go, well, shit, I don't do nothing but practice. I don't want to go home to that guy that put the cigarette butt.
You never got adopted?
No. No. But I got befriended. You know, I got friends that would take me home, invite me over to their house, and I got to see what a family looked like. You know what I mean? I got to see what a family acts like. I got to see, like, oh, there really are mom and dads, and there's just really people do, like, make dinner and all that stuff and sit at a table and all that. And so when you have a kid, you know, you start having kids, first of all, you learn on the way. You're like, you know what I mean? Like, I picked up fatherhood from other people's dads, but I never had a father that taught me how to be a father, you know?
That's so crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So I made a whole lot of mistakes being a dad, believe me. I made a bunch of them. And but with my kids, I had two boys first. I was really, they were my world, you know what I mean? But I wanted to make sure they didn't get what I did. I wanted to make sure that I was there all the time. I went to their games. I went to their school stuff, whatever. So you want your kids to have better than you had, you know. And that, you know, it was a challenge.
it was a definite challenge because I know my boys, I made daddy mistakes, you know what I mean? I was like, you know, I'm talking about giving them candy at midnight and stuff. And wondering why they're still awake at 4 o'clock in the morning. They got to go to school at 7. You know, so, I mean, there's definitely some things. But I've always been their coach, too. So, that was always a blessing. You know what I mean? I'd go to, you know, I'm a football coach. So, I'd go to football coach and the football team was on. I'm like, is this what we're doing? You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'll help out. You know,
whatever. You do basketball, too, right?
I do basketball, too.
My dad was saying that you have some athletes that are just taking off with basketball that you coach.
I have a lot of those. Yeah, I have a lot of those. I have a lot of football guys, and I'm blessed. You know what I mean? I've got some guys that are doing pretty good. I just had a kid right now, Brendan Doyle, who just came in yesterday. He got a full ride football scholarship to the University of Memphis. So, wow. Yeah. And he works really, really hard. He's the guy that comes back every summer. He works out with, and he's been doing this since he's been in seventh grade. He's worked out with me every summer, no matter what big school he's in. He comes home and we hang out. And so I'm lucky. I got Rashawn Mills. He's working out with me now right now too. He's about to go play pro football. So anyway, I'm waiting for one of these guys to turn into multimillionaires so they can buy me some.
Heck yeah.
But
it'll happen.
Yeah, I ain't had one of them yet, but I've had some ones that, you know, my whole thing is, and I tell them all the time, you know, not everybody's going to be a pro football player, but everybody can own a company. You know, everybody can be a good father. You know, everybody can be a good citizen. Everybody can be good at their job. Whatever your job is, you know, take this skill and apply it to this life and you'll be all right. You know what I mean? So just work hard, get up early, make sacrifices, all those things that sports teach you. It's taught me that, you know. You know, what you put into it is what you're going to get out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
It seems like sports are the first thing that could help someone believe in themselves.
I think that sports is, you know, them taking away money from sports is always like the dumbest thing the government could do, you know. Them taking away music from schools. I'm like, what are you thinking? I mean,
yeah,
kids don't have instruments and stuff like that. What are you thinking? Teachers don't have pencils to give kids in an art class. I'm like, how do you have an art class and you don't have nothing to draw with? Well, you know, they didn't cut back on all this kind of stuff. I go, you're kidding me.
Yeah,
you're kidding me. You know, you're paying, you know, 9 security guards here. You know, get 6 of them and take half of that and put it back into your arts program. And, you know, you'll see kids not wanting to deal. Them kids that are drawing on that wall or spray paint, they like to draw on something like this.
Yep.
If you just give them a chance, you know. Mm-hmm. We have a daughter, Olivia, and she's the kid that was on my basketball team. And she's Olivia, 30-something now? So she was on my basketball team in high school and have not went home yet.
What do you mean?
She just became one of our kids, you know? And her mom and dad, you know, they were like, okay, you're going to live with Coach now. And my wife just took her under her wing, and she's got her master's in music. That's the one that can sing real well. You know, she can sing and play any kind of instrument. You ought to see her singing in the church, girl.
Dang.
Oh, man, make a man with no legs want to dance.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she's just gifted. But this is what I'm saying. This is what I get to see. There's no money in coaching. You know, you're not getting, you know, I see these college coaches, you know, they're getting $7 million a year and all that kind of stuff. But those are the few, you know. There's a lot of guys and girls out here helping and mentor kids. And there's a lot of guys and girls who have to take them. You don't know how many times I've been at practice and the parent didn't come pick up the kid. The kid is still sitting there. Or they show up 2 hours later. You know, I usually tell parents, okay, if you're not here in an hour, your kid will be at my house. Period. Yeah, I'm waiting for you. Yeah, and, you know, I got an amazing daughter that way, so she's amazing. You know, my daughter Kaya is amazing, and my son Quillen is amazing. I'm lucky I got amazing kids, they're gifted. Sabrina's amazing. And it is, in this thing, we get, you know, you get kids. You're going to be surrounded. Now, I like working with at-risk kids, as they say it, because they said that I was an at-risk kid. You know, I was the kid. And I always wondered, like, at risk of what? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. What am I at risk of? Yeah, I'm at risk of failing. Or my chances aren't real good like everybody else's. Dang. Okay, all I need is one chance. Mm-hmm. That's it. Just give me one chance. Okay? And if I blow that chance, that's to me. My whole theory, if it's to me, it's up to me. I'm going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. Okay? But you're not going to tell me because I was beaten in some foster home that I'm going to be a horrible father. You ain't going to tell me because my mom was a heroin addict that I'm going to turn into a heroin addict and shoot heroin in my and rob people all my life. You know, you're going to tell me that I didn't have a role model, so my role model is some mass murderer or something, and I'm going to be that guy. No. Now, I didn't get told all these things. I learned all these things in the process. And so now I get to work with kids and let them know there's a chance. There's an opportunity. It's a small one. Okay, I'm not telling you, you got a big old chance. You're not going to get driven in a nice car and everybody's going to buy you the brand new glove and you're going to have the cool cleats and all that kind of stuff. But we're going to have a little bit of something. We're going to have it where we can have a start. And then if you let me help you, you know, we can make this happen.
Did you grow up feeling like your life had no purpose?
I grew up feeling confused. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when people tell you enough times, you start thinking, okay, I don't deserve this. Okay, I remember living at this foster home where everybody else, that their kids got regular plates and we had paper plates and a plastic knife and a plastic fork. And that's what, you better eat fast because you only get one of those paper plates. Okay, so your food's gonna go in. So I always thought I was second class or I wasn't worthy. Or, you know, they went to school with nice clothes. I went to school with Salvation Army clothes. You know what I mean? You get to a point to where you are definitely, you know, you get to an age kind of looking around like, this ain't fair. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not fair. And there's a whole lot of ways of handling not fair. You know, there's not fair can make you, you know, I can beat you up and take your shoes, or I can steal your stuff. You know, I can sit in class and just be a complete jerk. You know what I mean? And those, to me now, because I've gone through that, I know those signs though. I know, I can look at kids almost just like, okay, that kid, he needs some help. That kid doesn't have a parent. Mm-hmm. Somebody's told him he's worthless.
So there's something that I've been hearing more often as I'm like learning how to deal with people, and just people give me advice, and it's you can't help everyone.
No. Mm-mm. And that used to be my problem.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You can ask my ex-wife. I used to try to bring home every kid I could. Mm-hmm. I tried to help every single kid I could. Every one of them. And it has to be a want, number one. Yeah, the kid's got to want to do it. You know what I mean? I'm really a tough coach. Mm-hmm. And I tell the people all the time, I'm not for everybody. You know what I mean? I'm not going to allow a kid to disrespect me, talk to me any kind of crazy way. All that kind of stuff doesn't happen with me. You know, and if it does, you know, okay, you have a choice here. I want to help you if I can. Mm-hmm. But if you don't want help, then that's another problem. You know what I mean? So trying to save everybody is always, you know, that's why I built my own nonprofit, because it's hard to help everybody too. Mm-hmm. Like if you go to Gilroy High or Live Oak or any of these schools around here and say, hey, look, I got a bunch of kids that they want to play football. Okay, but they don't have any money, you know what I mean? But they go to school and they get good grades, but you guys have a $300 fee for them to play. And they just say, well, okay, well, what do you want me to do? Mm-hmm. They go, well, I want you to either let them work it off, or they don't have a parent that's gonna pay, or is there some kind of way that we can get this in or whatever? And they slip through the cracks. They don't get to play. I have 5-8-year-old kids that, you know, they really don't get a chance. And they're the ones outside playing all the time. you know, they don't have enough money to have a video game. Like people are saying, the video games and cell phones are killing kids. I go, well, I know kids that can't afford a video game and a cell phone. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the ones outside playing because that park is a lot funner than being at home. You know, they got a drug addict mom or dad, and they're at the park to keep away from that mess that they see every day. So, you know, I'm now got a nonprofit with JR Miles Adams Sports. We're trying to raise money to make sure that kids have, it's number one, a safe place to go, you know, and a safe environment. But, you know, we'll get things for them, like, you know, shoes or shirts or whatever, a book or, you know, a laptop, you know, anything they need, you know, to be able to be successful. I think you can't save them all. You're right. But I can save who comes through my door. Mm-hmm. You know, I can help you if you come through my door. But I used to try to go get the whole boys' ranch, everybody in there. But I can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, so
is it easier to help people than it seems? Like, because I didn't know there was an orphanage in Gilroy.
Really? Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. You ever been to South Valley Junior High?
Yes, I think I've seen it.
It's huge. It's right across the street.
Yeah, well, that's crazy. Yeah. And do they have like volunteer opportunities and stuff like
that?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, they're my niece Ashley works there now. That's funny. Wow. Yeah, she works there. But it ain't the same. It ain't an orphanage now. They just, they counsel kids and whatever and whatnot, and then they move out. But they don't live there no more. When I was there, you lived there.
Where are those kids living now?
Which kids?
The kids that would be living at the orphanage. That
they got them in other foster homes and all that now.
Is the foster system still kind of corrupt? You can't really control it?
Well,
or is it more?
There's good people and bad people and everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's some foster parents that are doing some amazing things. There's some people who are doing it for the right reason. Their heart. They're doing it for their heart. They're saving kids. They're sacrificing their whole life, all their money and everything to make sure these kids have a great opportunity. You know? And then there's people doing it for the money. You know what I mean? There's people doing it for the money. Simple and just like that. They're doing it to get money, you know. So I can't speak on them, you know. I can't speak on the good, the bad, or the ugly, because I deal with the good, the bad, and the ugly. I see it all, you know. I see good ones. I see people kind of semi in it, and I see people that really shouldn't be doing this at all. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, but the need is so great, you know. So you figure, okay, I got a mom that's a prostitute, that's a heroin addict, that has a kid living with her. Okay, so I'm gonna take this kid and put him in a home where he's not treated really fair, but he gets to eat and he has an opportunity to go to school. So, what do you want him to do?
Yeah,
there's your choice.
Yeah.
Okay. Or you have a kid that's living in that same environment, a very abusive father, you know, drinks a lot, you know, the mom and dad's fighting all the time. He's beating up on mom or whatever, and CPS takes him away and puts him into, you know, sweet Polly Purebred's house, where you got some super fun loving lady that's gonna love this kid. She's gonna hug him, she's gonna hold him, mm-hmm. and let them know he's important and make sure he gets to everything he needs, and he has a very great, successful life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there's your choices.
And you don't know. Crazy. It's like a gamble.
It's a gamble. Well, it's you go to school, right? Mm-hmm. Like I tell people all the time, you go to school all the time. All them teachers ain't good.
That's true.
All them teachers don't like being a teacher. All them teachers don't understand that this is what you're here for. You know what I mean? And they're like, man, I'm just trying to get through the day. You know, I'm not going to do anything outside my comfort zone. I'm going to teach in class. As soon as this class is over, my job's over. You know, I'm not going to go watch your game. I'm not going to see you at lunchtime. I'm not going to walk out during break. I'm not going to say hi to you when we're seeing each other in town or anything like that. I just teach. You know what I mean? Then you have the other teacher that goes out of the way. You'll always see her at your game, or you'll always see her.
True.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, man, I like Mr. Smith. You know, he's super cool. You know, he's just going out of his way. He's just taking into, I'm saving lives. I'm helping kids to survive. You know what I mean? And in my world, I see all those teachers. I see them all, you know what I mean? Because I invest. I go to school. Well, you did what in class? I'm going to be at your class tomorrow. You know, teacher's like, I'm so glad you came. You go, well, anytime you have a problem with him, you call me.
So that's really crazy. Like, it, there's not crazy family systems that only a parent can come represent, like, this kid if this kid's having problems at class, if they're, like, their closest person, right? Mm-hmm.
I'm what you call, what would be that word? I'm fortunate. I've done enough. I've done this for 40 years. So my track record is pretty good at this. Now, which is funny, I got a drug felony, what, 40 years ago or something? Mm-hmm. But it's on my record. So if I were to go to apply for a school district job, they won't give me the job because of that. Like, if I wanted to coach at Gary High School or Christopher or something, they wouldn't give me the job because they'll tell me I did something 40 years ago. I go, well, you know, that thing that happened 40 years ago is what makes me understand that kid that you're having a problem with today. Okay? That drug problem makes me identify with that drug problem of that kid that they have today. That anger problem, that what was going on then, makes me identify with that now. Mm-hmm. So basically, yeah, you have the degree, but you don't have the knowledge to deal with these kind of kids. Okay? Now, it's funny, though, because I went to school with a lot of guys that are principals now. That's cool. And I'm not going to say their names, but they're principals now. Or they're athletic directors now. Or they're head coaches now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they invite me as much as they can. Come in here. I need you to talk to this kid. Dang. Casey, I need you to go talk to this kid over here. Yeah. You know, I got this black kid that just moved here, and he's got a, you know, he's having issues or whatever. I got this other Mexican kid over here that's blah, 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 or even the white kid over there. He's just like wants to be a troublemaker, but he wants to play sports. I need you to go talk to him, go whatever. You know what I mean? So I've done that a lot. And, you know, so, you know, you're doing it in a different kind of way. But it's funny, like in a Christian school, I'm hired right away. Mm-hmm. Christian schools, they get it right away. They're like, oh, no. We want a guy like that. Yeah, we want a guy because we don't know that, but we are having problems with kids like that trying to get into our schools now. So we need somebody that got a little bit of streetwise and all this kind of stuff. Valley Christian, I still go there all the time. That's where my son went to school. I'm there every year. I don't miss football games. I don't miss nothing. And I'm allowed to be on the sideline. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to help coach. I'm allowed to give advice. I can walk into their basketball games. I get a big hug by the principal, you know, the chancellor, all of these guys. I know everybody. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And that is, I'm more proud of that because we've done work in my son's honor. You know, they know mm-hmm. we're running camps. They know we're helping people. They know we're building. You know, like I've tried to gun up there. And I would never forget, I'm not going to say his name, but he knows who I'm talking about. Him saying, you need to be a blessing in your own church. Mm-hmm. Okay? Stop coming to San Jose. Gilroy needs guys like you. You need to stay and help your community. Because I was always, like you were saying, trying to help everybody. He goes, nah, you got to, you know, those kids. So I send kids there now all the time. So anyway, it's...
What church?
I go to two churches. I go to Pastor Malcolm's church, New Hope. Mm-hmm. And I go to Pastor Harris Church. That's more of a... it's a Baptist church. So they get their groove on it.
Yep. You know,
they got a little bit of funk up in there. And then I go to New Hope, which is, you know, they're more, I won't say white, but they're a little more mild-mannered, but they are what they are. You know what I mean? So those are my two churches that I attend to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you get right in touch with the people right around you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're in your own block. They're in your own neighborhood. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And this is what I'm always trying to tell people. You know, you guys are trying to do all this stuff getting out of here. We got this own stuff happening in our own backyard. You guys think this stuff happens in big cities. There's kids out here cutting themselves right here. There's girls out here that have no hope. There's boys out here that are just brutalized and harassed and molested. And you guys think that happens in a big city? No, it happens right here, right in your own backyard. And we need to help them.
Right. And it seems kind of hard to reach high schools, I guess. Like when I was in high school, I was in high school, so it was easy to be in contact with everyone mm-hmm. and have access. You're one of them. And mm-hmm. it's very clear that mm-hmm. these 4 years uh-huh. are so impactful. The bullies you never forget. The teachers that believe in you and mm-hmm. and will have lunches with you to just mm-hmm. poor knowledge or just talk to you as an adult and just give you advice, you never forget those people. Like, those 4 years are so significant. But now that I'm out, it's like, I don't even know how to reach high schoolers. Like, how do you get in there? How do you, if you have the heart to help, how do you?
You go to the front office and you say, I am Hannah. I am really good at broadcasting. I'm really good at training. I'm really good at singing. I'm really good at just communicating with other girls who may need some help. How can I volunteer to help your school?
You know, that's foreign knowledge to me. I'm like, really? That's all what it takes?
Pretty simple. Now, you'll have a different answer depending on where you go. But believe me, there's girls out there that need girls like you. You know what I mean? I have a girls' basketball team right now. A girls' basketball team that I am clearly the toughest coach they ever had. But they went from kindergarten girls that couldn't dribble the ball to fifth grade girls that are playing for national championships now.
Wow.
Yeah, they're good. And there's only seven of them. There's only seven of them. And we work so hard at all kinds of things. But I'm super blessed because they have moms that kind of get me, number one, because I'm tough. And dads that get me when I'm tough. But they have problems. They have girl problems. And I have girls around me or moms around me that embrace them like a family. And they all get to talk about all kind of crazy good stuff. You know what I mean? And they'll tell me in a hot minute, you know, what happened at school. You know, what happened, who said what. Or they were somewhere and this happened. And I'm always laughing like you guys really got to tell me all this stuff. Yeah,
they want to.
But they want to. And then there's this that trust thing. You know, it's that trust. Kids, I remember being raised not to like the police. I mean, you absolutely should despise the police. Despise them. They're all bad. They're all going to arrest you. They're all going to take you to jail. They're never going to say anything. But I was raised with this police officer, Norm. He's dead now, but he was with us when we were little kids. He was the best police officer in the world. Best police officer in the world. He'd get out, take his gun off, lock it in his car, and come play basketball with us. He would take us down to the boys' club. And just always, man, Officer Gardner. I'll never forget this guy. Now, when I move here in Gilroy at this orphanage, he starts working at the police station here in Gilroy. Now, this is from Seaside to here. So,
Monterey?
Yeah. So, he's here. And sure enough, we run into each other. And he's got my back. I grow up all this time knowing him and his daughters and his family. We start playing in a men's basketball league with your dad.
Whoa.
He burns in there.
That's where it connects.
Yeah. So, it's just a small world. So, this is what I'm saying. In my world, I meet people like this. You know, and I tell him, I go, hey, look, I'm working over here at the, I'm doing some things over here with the boys' ranch. I need a cop to go in there. And I need you to answer every nasty question they're going to ask you.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Now, he's got a little swag in him. He got a little bit of cool about him. But he could go in there, the big old white dude, going in a predominantly black Mexican environment. And so everybody's supposed to not like each other in this environment. And we're all laughing and having a good time. Because the stereotype is now been dismissed. So now this kid is not going to see a cop and just run for no reason. Or get pulled over and think he's going to get shot. You know what I mean? And then vice versa. This cop is going to have more respect for this kid who's got dreadlocks and gold teeth. And he's got a different kind of look.
It was kid. Oh, the Boys and Girls Club. So that's kids and a cop.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So I had to bring the two worlds together is what I'm saying.
Dang, I love that you're saying that because I've met more people recently that are big cop haters.
Yeah.
And I know family and friends that have become cops and just faced some situations where the cops are first ones there and they didn't have that mentality. So I'm like, no, we don't hate the cops. Like, cops are good. And instead of just carrying these opinions, I try to like, so what happened to you that makes you like not trust cops? And yeah, there's stories of being falsely accused, and being like treated poorly without knowing the whole story.
I've had everything that can happen from a police officer happen. Mm-hmm. I've walked out of bars and cops pulled me over, put me down, put a gun in the back of my head and tried to tell me I was somebody else.
Yeah.
Want to see my license and my ID. You know, I've had horrible experiences with cops, right? To where it took me a minute to go, it was that particular cop that did that. It wasn't the whole damn force.
Right.
But I'm having an attitude about all of them. You know, I'm black, you know, it happens to most black dudes. You know, we hear these, you know, funny black stories all the time, you know, and it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get it twisted. But when you're telling me I don't want no police officer out there, I'm like, you done lost your mind. Because
mm-hmm.
I know some people who would take total advantage of that. But it has to be, it's just like the guy that got choked out on TV and got killed, you know. And a cop, we all seen it, we all watched it. And this happens more often than we want to know. You know what I mean? He just died. But getting choked to a point to where you don't die happens a lot. So that's not on the news. You know, getting the gun put on your head and then getting released to go because they find out you're not who they thought you were.
Mm-hmm.
That happens all the time, right? So kids will start having a bad attitude. Like, you know, get off of him, leave him alone, whatever, whatever. And then people will tell you all cops are bad. And you start believing all cops are bad,
mm-hmm.
you know? So my whole thing with me is when I hear these kids talk about these bad stories, and I'm like, hey, look, that ain't every cop.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying, I mean, I had to teach my children, you know, because they're black. And when you get pulled over, you keep your hands on the damn steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If he says to get your wallet, you say, I'm reaching for my wallet. Okay. If he says, get your driver's license out, I'm getting my driver's license. And when he says, get your registration, you say, officer, I'm going to reach in my glove compartment and get the registration you asked me for because it's there. I don't want you to think I'm doing something else.
Yeah.
Now, that's unfortunate, but that's the reality of it. You know what I mean? Is that fair? Now, does that happen to a white kid? I don't know. You know what I mean? But I know it happens to black kids because the cops are coming with a certain kind of opinion and a certain kind of thought. You know what I mean? And you have to make sure that that opinion and that thought doesn't come in that conversation without you drastically talking mess back or saying something back or provoking an incident or whatever where you're both having a bad day or whatever and then turns into that bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the police and I cut hair for a living, so I cut cops' hair,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I get to ask them all kind of crazy stuff. I get to make fun of them and they get to make fun of me and we make a kind of a joke out of it. But this is something I do not want to be. You know, this is, being a police officer has got to be the toughest thing in the world right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, one of the guys that I went on vacation with is a police officer. So I had 3 days of hearing all of these stories and all these kinds of things, but great things that they do, you know, and then nobody never says that, you know.
Yeah.
Taking some kid home or buying some girl, you know, a sandwich or something. She's sitting there hungry at the bench and, you know, walking some old lady home or getting them out of some. I mean, there's a lot of positive that goes along
right.
with that. A lot of positive.
Media seems to highlight the negative.
Media can't wait for the negative.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, you gotta be careful of that.
Yeah. And that's why I like how you know, you have that sympathy and experience.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the reality, but also, as long as they exist, there has to be some sense of unity so everyone is safe.
Well, yeah. And then, a chance of being safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have an opportunity to escalate this or de-escalate it, right?
Yeah.
So it could be real bad, it could be real good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not naive to bad cops because there's some of them too, you know.
Yeah.
There's some of them. And so this is why, as a black man with black children, you know, especially black son,
mm-hmm.
I have to really teach him, if this ever happens, how to handle that situation. Now, unfortunately, I hope it never happens.
Mm-hmm.
But if it does, you know, you're to be very, very, very respectful. Okay? You know, just kids in general walking. It's just like, you know, I can send three different nationalities to go through the same job. And each of them, I got to tell a different way how you got to walk in there. And that's so unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so true. You know, it's just like a teacher will like a certain way you walk in your classroom. You know what I mean? And if you look a different kind of way, you better be acting a certain kind of way. Mm-hmm. Or you're not going to get the same break. Where some teachers don't care what you look like. They're just going to be cool teachers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's ideal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's the ideal situation, but that's not reality.
Yeah.
It's that's just like a job or a university mm-hmm. and all that stuff. You know, it's just the world the way it is. You know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
The way it is. I was so shocked when I like learned and understood that Black parents have to have a sit-down conversation with their kids and tell them, know your rights, be obedient, go, like, just this intensity of if a cop pulls you over, you gotta, like, just, it's very different than how I was taught, you know? I can be, however, and it's this color of the skin. It's an ignorance because I don't know, but it was crazy to learn that.
Now, and we're... And it's so glad you know you see that and you know that and it's that's what really has to happen, you know. Unfortunately, you know, people of color, and that's Mexicans, you know, I would say Asian, you know, Blacks. I mean, people of color, just people of color in general. And I'm talking about boys. I can't really, I don't talk about girls too much, but boys of different kind of colors. They in my world, they've all had a problem. Because of their color, not for any other reason, but the color of their skin. And I tell them, you're beautiful.
Yep.
You are beautiful. I don't care if you black as night, you're beautiful. Okay. I don't care if you white as a chalkboard, you're beautiful. And now if you walk around like you're beautiful, it's going to shine and people are going to treat you like you're beautiful, period. Just be a beautiful person. So whoever ugly wants to try to get into your world, He's going to walk away feeling better because he's going to look better because he dealt with a beautiful person. So that's my look on it. And I truly believe in that. I'm not going to let, you know, nobody turn them into something that they ain't. But they got to learn to don't let nobody turn you into something that you ain't. Because people make you start hating behind that mess. You know, telling you you this and telling you you that. And because you did this, or your brother or some cousin or something like that did something like that, and now I don't like you or whatever. You know, they got serious problems with that kind of stuff. But you're right. It's you know, teaching people how to act. But that's just respect, you know. You go to the South, everybody's got respect. Everybody. You know, everybody's yes, sir, no, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Very, very, very. You know, kids now, you know, they need to work on some of that stuff. But, you know, but, you know, people like us, you know, we're like, gonna make sure you're going to say thank you. You know, that's the one word you're going to learn. All that other mess you're talking about, I need you to learn how to say thank you. Just be grateful. Period. Yeah.
Since you've been working with kids just for the long term, recently with the window of COVID changing things, have you noticed a change in behavior with kids you're working with?
COVID has absolutely put a whole new spin on this thing. My daughter was playing college basketball at the time, and it all stopped. You know, she's now working at Kaiser. You know what I mean? So it took away that opportunity. Not took away, but for 2.5 years, they couldn't do none of it. That's your dream. Now, what did these kids do during that? I get, right now, when COVID finished, I got kids that had been, I mean, just destroyed by this. I'm talking about, can you imagine you're home now every day with that drunk dad. See, before you used to go to school, and then you got to go play sports. So you were gone 9 hours. Now I'm with you every day. So you know what kind of ass whoopings I had to deal with? You know what kind of molestation went on then? You know what kind of kids start finding pills in the cabinets? You know how kind of pills in the cabinet, went to the next door neighbor and said, try one of these. It just blew up. And we couldn't do nothing to help them. I got calls. Oh my God, did I get calls? You got to come get my kid. You get my kid's in. You know, he's bouncing off the wall. He's going crazy here. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, they want to put him on Ritalin and all this other kind of crazy stuff because he's going nuts. I go, he's home. Go outside and walk. I didn't say you can't ride your bike. You know, you guys got to get them off of them video games. Can you imagine a kid sitting around for 2 years straight playing a murder video game? A murder video game. I'm talking about a game where I'm killing people all day, every day. Okay? Or, you know, you've seen these games. They're crazy. I couldn't believe what they were playing. You know? And so now, that language in that is what I'm using. That thought in that is what I'm using. And I mean, most sports teams in all the high schools now, the numbers are in half.
In like high schools and colleges?
In half. High schools, really. Hmm. College is a little bit different.
Oh, that's weird.
It's in half.
They'd all want to.
You think that after it would be over, everybody would be jumping to go play sports again? No. It's horrible. It's horrible. It is. The numbers are so low. Kids just got into doing other things. Yeah, they just don't. They don't want to do it. They got into their phones. Ugh. Yeah, it's horrible. It's gonna take a long time to get it back. But I got those kind of problems now.
So, if you were to be kind of more in control, if you had that kind of power when COVID things were going down, what would you suggest to be done differently? With what you know now.
Wow. Damn, that's a good question. That's a crazy good question. What would I do? I would say, because COVID put such a fear in everybody.
Right.
You know, and then they kept showing everybody dying in the hospital. And then they, you know, basically, I cut hair for a living. Because you imagine what it did to our businesses? I mean, nobody wanted to come in and scared that somebody was there with COVID or whatever, whatnot. Now, what you would do different, I would think, would definitely get more informed. Let's get informed about this first before we start saying things. But it was a lot of crazy going on.
Because there's two types of people, and the other opinion was a bad guy. And then, right. And then families split. Because if you were anti this, yeah. Sorry, we can't be family anymore.
Yeah. And I'm a non-confrontational, let you think how you want to think, mm-hmm. and then you believe that, and then you suffer your own consequences behind it. You know, now, I can't say that with a 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I can tell that with adults. How you think of this is, how you think it's fake or not, if you want to get a shot or not, that's all your opinion, and you've grown. Make some grown folk opinions or decisions. Now, that 10-year-old.
Yeah.
That's where I wish we had something for them. I know they hate it doing school on Zoom. I know they hate it not being able to go outside. I know they hate it wearing masks. I know they hate it all that stuff. And then it just turned them to a different mentality. Mm-hmm. The mentality changed. So, and there's, here we are a couple years later, and it's still barely changing. You know what I mean? So, it's tough.
Yeah. It's good to know, though, because, you know, your life is such a story of hope, mm-hmm. and that there are these problems happening, young people suffering and just getting the consequences of so many things without choice, you know, without mm-hmm. even putting themselves in that situation. It's just kind of brought up in it. Mm-hmm. Like, you're feeding hope into those situations and right. people's lives, and them having a family, someone to depend on, that's so rare. And like, what I really love about you is you make it, you're proof that it's possible.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'm young, but I have a heart for young people. They're a little bit intimidating because they're totally different, with just different times, different ages, always makes things different. But just show up to the high school. If you want to help them, go there. If you have a heart for foster, learn more about it and be a foster parent. Like, it's really not that hard. Or was it hard to start a nonprofit?
Yeah. Well, it you go through all these things before you get to a point to where I need to have my own thing. Mm-hmm. Because I can't go through all these hoops that you keep asking me to go through. Mm-hmm. They've closed everything because of money or financial schools. You have to rent a high school now. You know, if you want to have a practice in a high school, like, say nobody's in there, they're going to charge you $200 an hour to have a practice in there. Well, I need to have 10 practices. Where am I going to come up with?
Yeah.
I need to. That's 10 practices a week. You know, It's crazy. You know, we have another organization called NJB. It's the National Junior Basketball Association. And me and my buddy Joe Lampkin run this place. And it is impossible to get gyms. We used to be able to get gyms. And this is on Sunday afternoon, you know. And all of a sudden, the fees to use these gyms and the insurances and everything is just ridiculous. So you figure 30 teams, that's 300 kids that can't play because of astronomical fees.
Hmm.
Yeah. So what do they do?
Anything else? Phone?
Yeah. So they're going to go back to that video game?
Yeah.
They're going to go back to the walking the street? They're going to go back to that kid that found his parents' pills? You're going to go to that, you know, weed, and everybody thinks it's all legal and everything now? I go, yeah, that's great, but I'm talking about a 10-year-old. I'm not talking about an 18-year-old smoking weed. He's old enough to do what he wants. I'm talking about a 10-year-old, I got to tell. You're not smoking weed and coming up in here, you're just going to lose your mind. Dang. Yeah. So it's. I'm in the business of saving lives. I know that. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look at it any other way. Okay? Yeah, you think I'm coaching, I'm saving lives. That's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I wish that somebody was there for me when I needed that. But because I went through that is why I do it. That's the reason why I do it. Because I know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes one to know one.
Dang.
And you don't know how big it is when I walk up to a kid and go, hey, look, I used to be in this foster home too. And they go, really? I go, yeah. Look, I got molested too. Okay? Really? You're a big old buff coach. Who was messing with you? I go, I got messed with too. Okay? I didn't have no food. I remember we didn't have no food either. Oh, you guys didn't have food either? No. What happened? My mom's a drug addict. Really? So was mine. Did yours be tweaking and everything? She go, yeah, how do you know about that? Because I went through it.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I got a degree in streetology. You know, that's where my master's is. Yeah, I got a whole different kind of diploma.
Hmm.
You know, so it takes one to know one. And when you see it and you see their faces, when they go, really? Yeah, that's the best thing ever. That means everything that I've gone through, good and bad, was worth it. Because now I get to help that person so they don't have that 40 years of pain. You know what I mean? They don't have going through that. They know I have a chance because he told me.
Jeez.
Yeah. You go and say, well, no, Casey Adams sent me here. Okay, you can come in.
Dang.
You come in. Yeah, you can come in. Yeah, we're going to give him a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I call the school and say, hey, give him, it's one of my kids. Oh, okay. Now I know who to call when you get out of line, too. So it works.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And I'm so proud of you.
Thanks.
I'm so proud of you to be doing this. And you've been up here talking to grown folks on a podcast. So I watch you guys. I support you guys.
Thank you.
I want you to keep doing what you're doing.
Yes, I will. The goal is to be with the people, though, like you, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm meeting them now. I'm finding ways and, like, promoting people's stories to get these messages heard, to give hope. But ideally, like, one day I want to be, like, with the kids, with the young
people.
You're
gonna be there. I don't know when she's coming, but there's going to be a girl that's going to ask me to want to be somebody like you. And I'm going to go, okay, just the girl I need you to talk to.
I'll be there.
Oh, you're going to be there. Believe me. I'm telling people all the time. I'm almost like that godfather that says, hey, look, I'm going to call you one day. I'm going to ask you for a favor, and you cannot tell me no.
Of course not.
Okay.
last question. What piece of advice would you give to someone to elevate their lives today?
Do something for somebody and don't expect nothing in return.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to elevate your life.
Because
mm-hmm. when you do something for somebody and it helps them, it helps you.
Dang.
Yeah.
Amen to that.
Amen.
Thank you so much for being here.
All right.
Thank you, guys. Have a beautiful day and keep elevating.
All right.